This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
Wingardium Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I do.
You may the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Caring, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts of being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, my name is Monica, and with me today is my lovely, amazing, glorious, with a wonderful t-shirt, which we can tell you later where we got this from, co-host Amanda. Hi, Amanda. How are you
doing? Hi, Moni. I'm good, thank you. I think you're really excited. You can take a breath.
That is really hard today. It is really hard today because I don't think I even proper had the time to let it sink in what is happening today. And now it's happening and now I'm too excited.
So what is happening today? Do you want to be very excited and fangirl and let that excitement overflow, do the things that you want to do?
It's going to be really embarrassing.
Do
but
it.
Sure.
We love embarrassing you.
Well, I'm not embarrassed, and like other people are more embarrassed because of me, and I'm just like, whatever. That's but true. Today, if I would, I can make a drum roll. I just can't, the drum roll is just not on the podcast, but I have a drum roll because today we have the wonderful, the only, the amazing, the glorious Jordan from Jordan Dene and the Sartorial Geek podcast here with us, which we have been fangirling about for years, like literally for years. Amanda and me were like, when we were sitting down and having this dream guest client list, and we were like, who do we want to have on? And we were like, yeah, there's this person and Jordan, because that would be amazing. But I think we're too small and too tiny and too insignificant for anybody to care. So we just put that on the future list and it's going to be fine. And apparently today is the fucking future because this is fucking happening and Jordan is here.
Sorry. This is the best intro I've ever had in my entire life to anything.
Worth being on the show just for that.
Also, you could have asked me 3 years ago. It would have been fine.
You say that now. It wasn't fine for us. We were like, we're just doing this. We don't know what we're doing. We're just doing this.
No one ever knows what they're doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
I mean, it's mood. A mood. So hi, welcome to Geek Herring.
Thank you. This is wonderful. I love seeing you too. I get to see, I don't know if everyone listening gets to see, but I can see your faces. That's cool.
Everyone else gets to see everyone's faces too. At least if they're live on Twitch, just not if they're listening to the podcast.
That's also awesome. If you don't catch it live, there is a possibility to catch the replay because we like have all the replays stored on Twitch, if I don't forget to save them, to be honest. I mean, a few have gone down the drain, but like a lot of them are still there, and this is definitely one we're gonna save.
Well, great.
Amazing. Yeah, shall we get started here, Jordan? Let's find out all about you. We're gonna go right into a rapid fire round.
Cool.
Okay.
Should I answer these very fast? I saw that it was a rapid fire.
You can answer them as fast as you want.
Okay.
There is no prize for fastest completion, though maybe that's something we should do. They have ranged anywhere from 2 minutes to 15 minutes to answer these questions.
Perfect.
I do think sometimes we're an hour into the podcast and people ask, wasn't that a rapid fire round? Are we through it already? And we're like, oh, we gave up on that like half an hour ago. Or
yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Perfect.
Okay. In your own words, who are you?
Oh, I am Jordan Ellis. I run Jordan Dene and co-run the Sartorial Geek, two nerdy companies. And I also just moved to Philadelphia from Brooklyn. I've been here for 2 weeks, which is why I still have unpacked things in the background.
Wow. Thank you for being on the show amidst the move. That's amazing.
Yeah, this is the fun thing I get to do instead of unpacking all day. So this is great.
Nice distraction.
Yeah.
Cool. So are you from Brooklyn?
I grew up in a suburb of Philly, and then I was in Brooklyn for 12 years, and now I'm back here. So I've been in this little chunk of the northeast of the United States.
Nice. I lived for a period of time in Bethlehem, which is not too far
away
from Philly.
Yeah, that's not far at all. Yeah.
That's my little, hey, I know where you are.
Europe is better, though, I think. I'm jealous of both of you.
I mean, at the moment, I feel everything, like, everybody has the feeling of everywhere else is so much better
everywhere
than wherever
that's
we
not
are.
My house is better. Yeah, totally.
Relatable.
Yeah.
Jordan, what are your pronouns?
She, her.
And when are you a geek since? So a year, maybe a story of your first geeky experience?
I got really into Pokemon when I was probably like 7, 8, I think. So I had the cards and I traded them with my brother and we played and we saved up and got our first Game Boy together. So I think that was like the moment.
Nice. My biggest geeky confession is I don't really know anything about Pokemon. I play Pokemon Go and that's it.
That's fine.
I have to raise my hand for that. I do also think it's because of age and I had nobody that played it with me. So I'm like, that was totally between my child geek years and my I'm old enough to decide on my own what's cool kind of years. So that fell between that gap of I'm in puberty now, I'm a grown-ass adult, which I yes. obviously never was. So I guess that's where
I've also like nannied a lot over the years and I'm doing it again this summer, and so it has stayed cool with the kids somehow this whole time, so I keep like coming nice. Back to it. So the kids I'm hanging out with this summer are still super into Pokemon, so I'll nice. Bring that back again.
They kind of managed to keep that alive for sure, like with yeah. all the games and with all the other stuff. It's just
somehow
pretty cool wild. Though
yeah.
Yeah, it's like spanning generations. I think it's like Sailor Moon. It just keeps going as well. Everybody loves it.
Yep.
Yeah. Isn't there a Sailor Moon movie coming out soon or a new series or something? Never mind.
There
I
is.
Stopped trying to keep track of what's coming out because everything changed and then I got annoyed of trying to like figure out what's happening.
Yeah, there is a Sailor Moon movie. And the only reason I know is because our social media manager put it on our social media. And I was like, I should know that.
Well, now I know. I should also know that.
There you go. And what are some of your biggest influences? You can think like books, movies, TV shows, teachers, games, or anything else?
I think this is sort of recent, but I think recently the MCU has been one of them. It's so impressive to me, like, how well they thought this out and how connected it all is. Like, I love when things are connected and overlap, and watching how the MCU has taken like movies from 20 years ago and characters or 15 years ago from that long and then are, you know, incorporating into TV shows and then the comic storylines, I think that is so impressive. And really, like, I think comics fans have gotten to see that, but the fact that, like, TV and film fans can see now how, like, all the stories line up and how... Because I didn't read comics growing up. I always thought it was wild that, like, characters would drop into other comics because they don't really do that in movies because it's very hard to do that. And it's been really, really cool to see how Marvel has, like, created their little universe. Not little, their giant universe. yeah. I'm so impressed by all of that.
You yeah. just recently got a Captain Marvel tattoo, didn't you?
I did.
I've
never shown it to a camera before. I don't know how to.
I love so it. Cool. That's gorgeous.
I guess, yeah, Kelly Sue DeConnick is maybe the real life hero in my industry that's, like, you know, steps ahead and is one of the things that I think is amazing. She is so good at caring about, like, her community, too. So she has a text list that you can sign up for, and you don't have to, like, be a chosen one. You can just sign up for it if you're anyone. And she texts, like, just wonderful, helpful things about life and about being a good person, and also her comics coming out. But, yeah, I think she is one of the people in, like, the real-life humans in the nerdy space that I really look up to. And she's just cool. She's like a cool mom and a cool writer.
That's awesome.
Also, sorry if you can hear the construction that's happening downstairs. Okay, great.
No, I can't.
There's
no.
a drill. We're putting up some drywall on the first floor. So oh, gosh. I'm really glad no one can hear anything. Great. Perfect.
Yeah. Now, Yeti, on the other hand, would probably pick it all up.
Yeah, yeah. We made the right microphone choice.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, last question of the rapid fire round. What are your current geeky pastimes?
I love watching TV. So I used to watch a lot of movies, and I used to go see like all of the movies opening night, and then the past year has sort of changed that. And then movies got harder for me. Like, my quarantine brain, I don't know. Movies got harder to watch. I'm starting to watch them again, but like watching TV shows, sitting down and binging or rewatching nerdy things. Like I love rewatching things that go together. So like when Game of Thrones was on, this is insane. But like every time a new season came out, I would rewatch all the episodes until that season. So nice. I watched the beginning of Game of Thrones so many times. And so when anyone's doing like Marvel rewatches or, you know, Lord of the Rings extended edition, I'll watch it all. I love it.
That's awesome. I'm totally here for that. And it calms me that you say that quarantine brain makes it difficult for you to stick to a movie, because I start questioning my capabilities of generally not even being able to watch movies anymore properly, but I have no attention span anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where that went, but it's gone.
I know. I can't explain it. I'm sure a scientist somewhere has an answer for that, but I don't know what happened.
There will be so much literature in a couple of years about all the effects of a pandemic on people. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but my fiance and I have been watching one movie a week. And like even that, I kind of find hard to keep my attention, even though we've been on like an X-Men kind of binge, like one X-Men a week. I think we've only got just two or three left. But it's good, but it's like, oh, a movie. Do I have to?
Yeah. Which feels so silly, too. Like, watching a movie is the best thing. It's like pure just entertainment. And for some reason, it just got a lot harder. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's true. And because it's also films that you know that you actually really enjoy, right? You didn't just, like, start to drift off where the phone is next to you and you're like, oh, let me look into that, and you've like missed 30 minutes or whatever from whatever was going on, and you're like, well, this is shit. No, right? I can have to start over again or do other things. Yeah, life really got harder, even though it's like we're all at home, but it did get harder emotionally, and to like just stick to shit is difficult now, but it's fine. We'll get better. We'll get the vaccine, and then we all can do things again. Yay!
Yes. Yeah, and movies are starting to come out again. Like new, I know some were still released, but even that felt weird because like nothing came out when it was supposed to. So I feel like there's just this underlying like this movie wasn't really finished, and we just like finished it real fast, or like you know, this is coming out in the wrong order of stuff. So that'll be fun to have things.
Which apparently was an issue with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah. That's what Amanda then told me. That's the reason why I have no idea who that lady is.
Uh-huh. Everyone was like, what's happening right now?
Nobody tells us, and she's so, she seems weird, but is she evil? Is she not evil? Nobody knows. I haven't read the comics, so I don't know.
Yes. I don't know either.
Yeah, that's wasn't me reason. Who told you that. It was somebody in our chat.
Oh, was it in chat? I thought it was you.
No.
I just give the credit
to you. I didn't know
that.
Thank you. It wasn't me. I believe it was Taun.
That's fine. Like one of the things I'm most excited for Black Widow to like fill in the gaps.
Yeah, exactly. We were like, my fiance Tom, I'll just call him Tom. We were going to be with Monica in Austria to watch Black Widow.
Ah.
Like, we were going to, like, coincide it, and it was going to be awesome because we got to see Spider-Man Far From Home together in Austria, and we were like, yes, let's do this again for Black Widow. It's going to be amazing. And Wonder Woman 1984, which we no longer talk about, was just coming out, like, just a few weeks after that. So we were like, yeah, we'll stay, and we'll watch that one, too. And, yeah.
You would have walked out of the cinema with that movie, let's be honest. Wonder Woman 1984 was like one where we would have like probably both left, and Tom would have been so embarrassed because fuck this fucking movie. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm really glad I had to watch that at home and just not pay for it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I watched it with my parents, and Mom was like, wow, Wonder Woman's really changed from when I used to watch Wonder Woman. And I was like, this movie is really bad, Mom.
Yeah. Just don't think about it anymore.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about Wonder Woman. What's the geeky thing we are talking about today?
Me? Is that?
I was like, I'm not sure. That's correct. We are talking about it.
We are talking about Wonder Woman, actually. It's not wrong.
Yeah, I think we're talking about my two companies, Jordan Today and the Sartorial Geek.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't realize this. Today is the 10-year anniversary of Jordan Today, which I did not realize until Facebook gave me like a memory this morning, and I was like, oops, I missed that. Yeah, so that's perfect. It's been 10 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's wild.
10 fucking years.
Yeah,
what
that's
the
a
fuck?
Long time. That's a really long time.
What did I
it
do?
It looks
10 years
really
ago.
Different now.
Yeah, so
like, how did you tell us about it? How did you start? When did you decide? How did it all come about? And what, maybe first, what is it? Because I'm not sure everybody in chat or all the listeners know, which if you don't, who the fuck are you and why don't you? But
well, yeah, I can tell you where it started and where it is now because they're different. I said that I used to nanny a lot, and that's like not 100% creatively fulfilling for me, at least. So I was looking for something to do on the side. And 10 years ago was like around the time that Etsy was getting really popular. It had already existed for a while, but it was like, you know, most crafty people were sort of trying it out. So a friend of mine suggested it, and I knew how to sew. And I had this idea of like taking really traditional, like, kind of grandma crafts, like handmade things, and then adding a nerdy element to it, because those, like, now that's not really that crazy to think about, but 10 years ago people weren't really doing that. So I was sewing things, I was making aprons that were like costume aprons, so it would be like the Star Trek uniforms that you could like wear in your kitchen, or R2-D2.
Oh, yeah,
that's how it started.
That's amazing.
I was sewing every single thing myself for the first like 3 or 4 years crazy. Like, that's not sustainable at all. it was wild. So I got too busy. I had to stop nannying, which was a great problem. And my same friend that suggested I get on Etsy knew how to screen print. She was like, you need to get into screen printing because, you know, you can print 100 shirts in an hour instead of making like one thing in an hour. So at first I was sort of like, no, that's not what I do. Like, I make everything by hand. And then I have learned a lot over the past 10 years that like, sometimes being stubborn is okay, and sometimes it's like, no, just do the thing that makes so much sense. So I started screen printing shirts, which I never thought would be the business that I would get into, and that like took off more than anything. I mean, that's the only thing that anyone knows before now.
I mean, it's also been, when did you switch to the screen printing?
I think it probably was like 7 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like really, that's what it is now. So it, now Jordan Danae is a, like a subtly nerdy fashion brand that's mostly shirts and like sweatshirts and jackets. And then the Sartorial Geek came out of that 3 years ago because I got to meet so many cool people and like had so many interesting connections, but I couldn't really figure out like what to do with that, because you can't do like a shirt collaboration with everyone, you know.
Yeah.
Like, especially unless they're an illustrator or something. So I was like, what do we do? I know all these people, I want to do something, I want to share their stories, and I want to share their products. And so my college best friend and I were talking about it, and we decided to start a magazine like from scratch, which was crazy. And we released the first issue like 2 months after we had the idea. And then we were like, you know what? We're doing a million crazy things. Like, why not just start a podcast at the same time? Why not just start a website at the same time? So, yeah, 3 years ago, we launched all of that, and it's still running, which is amazing. And we have contributors, and we interview different people every week. We have 12 issues of the magazine out, so...
12 issues yeah. of the magazine? Nice. What, yeah. every month?
It's every quarter. So, oh, okay. So, or every, like, season, yeah. So okay. we've had 3 years of issues out, which is wild.
Yeah, I have one.
I should send you all of them. I definitely can send you all of them. That's part of what's in all these boxes here. Gosh, I still have, like, so many copies here.
Just going through my drawers, I'm like... I rearranged my office, and I'm like, I don't know where it is right now, but it's in this office somewhere.
That's awesome. Yeah, I could definitely send you all of them.
Oh gosh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, so that's a really fun transition. And also, I think Mani and I both relate a lot to, like, launching immediately. Because yeah. we have ideas and we do them, like, right away, and it stresses Tom out. He's like, you can't do that. You haven't thought about it for 6 months yet. Sorry, Tom.
I mean, pros there and cons to both, but
it is fun. I mean, there are really two operation modes with us. It's either we have the idea and we do it immediately, or we have the idea and it never happens. So sometimes to avoid the latter, we're like, well, we're going to do this now, because otherwise both of us know that it's just going to die down. It's going to die in the sand and it's never going to happen. So let's just do it now. And yeah. that's basically how the podcast started.
Exactly. Well, yeah. the podcast started out of spite, but yes.
Yeah. Also a great reason to do things. Liz and I do a lot of things for that reason, so I support it.
I mean, that's 99% how my life is run, but sure. Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
It works. It really works. It's very motivating.
Yeah. So what do you love about running a website, a podcast, a magazine, and a screen print shirt company? Screen print shirt? That just sounded like words that don't go together, but do explain what I was trying to say. I have a podcast too.
I think what I love the most and what I get the most, like, I'm a huge extrovert. And so the part of doing this that I love is meeting other people and either, like, just hearing their story and what they're doing, or my favorite thing is when I know a couple people who then, like, either I get to collaborate with them or they get to collaborate with each other, and, like, all of these talents and ideas come together. That's my favorite thing in the world. So that's what I love doing. I love doing, you know, for the clothing, either doing a collaboration collection with someone, or even, like, the photo shoots when I get to see cool human beings wearing my stuff, being, like, photographed by someone cool, and then the pictures look great, and then sometimes the designs are inspired by someone. So that's what I love, and that's why I like the podcast and doing interviews in the magazine, because then it's, like, a lot, like, for the magazine, it's a lot of different voices, you know, in one issue with different artists, and, like, seeing the diversity and getting different opinions. And being able to let people have different opinions, I think, is very cool, too. Because sometimes, like, we've even had people write stuff and they're like, this is a little, I don't know, are you okay that this is my, like, view on things? And we're like, yeah, if that's what you think, like, please don't censor yourself. I mean, if it's insanely horrible, but, like, that's never what it is. So that's my favorite part, is just seeing, you know, the world of nerds is so big and strange and interesting, and being able to be a part of that and, like, connect with different people is my favorite part.
I love that. What's one of the most controversial nerdy opinions you've seen come across the magazine?
Luckily, we haven't had, I don't know how we get so lucky, like, our fans and audience and people in our community tend to be pretty, like, aligned and open-minded, which is nice. So one of the things that the people want to talk about the most is gatekeeping, and luckily it's always on the side of don't do it. but I think that's one of the biggest things, is, like, how to, you know, check yourself, and, like, how, you know, different frustrating stories that people have about times that they experienced it, and even just in the way people review movies and TV shows and stuff, letting people have different opinions. That is really hard, and fans don't always like to disagree with each other. So that's maybe like, yeah, the thing that comes up the most. But again, I'm very lucky that we don't have a lot of fights happen. I think I would be much less excited to do what I do if it was. Fandom can get very intense, and we haven't had to break up a lot of fights or like navigate a lot of that, which is very nice.
Good.
Yeah.
You were speaking about gatekeeping before. Is it ever something you experienced in your business journey, basically, or in your journey as a female nerd out there, and just rocking the shit, that we constantly get basically gatekept? People always tell us we can't do this because we're girls, so that's why I'm asking, did you ever experience anything like this when you set up all the awesome things that you did set up?
I have been very, very lucky that, like, the time, I think I just hit the time where, like, that started being more acceptable. Like, my company started around the same time that Her Universe started. And Etsy was also, strangely, I feel like, really helpful in, like, female entrepreneurs being a thing. Like, I feel like a lot of makers started there, and Etsy was a very, like, easy-to-use platform that I think gave a lot of people, myself included, the, I guess, like, confidence to keep doing it. 'Cause I don't think I would have felt like I could just set up a website and get people to buy things, but that platform made it so possible. I think also being in New York for this, all of that time, that city is pretty like current and progressive and liberal. And, you know, I do feel very thankful that I haven't had a lot of that. There are occasionally, people are generally pretty nice to me, but there are some times at Comic-Cons where I've set up and like, you know, the sort of stereotypical like older men with comics to sell come up and they're like, what is this? Why are you selling this? Who buys this? And usually by the end of the show, they're either like jealous or get it. Like no one's ever like stayed nasty about it. But yeah, I do actually feel very lucky that somehow it hasn't been as big of a problem for me as it definitely could have been.
But that's good to hear too, like sometimes life is, and I mean, doing all the things and sewing all of this, you don't need people shitting on your parade at the same time anyway, so I'm glad that that's not something that you experience.
Yeah, and I think like if I was in the public more, like I tend to just sort of sell to my own little network. So there are times where I've done, you know, like Facebook ads that get pushed out to people who don't already know who I am. And that's definitely when comments come through that are like, this is trash. Like, what is this? Like, you know, but I don't do a lot of that. So that's kind of nice. Like, I don't interact with a lot of strangers who have no idea who I am or what I'm doing, which I think avoids a lot of that kind of tension.
So you basically built kind of the community first a bit through Etsy, and because you could do it on the side, and then because you already had all these nerdy people knowing you, then you switched to the, and then that's an epic strategy. That's organic marketing in the best way fucking possible, isn't it?
Yeah, it took a long time. You know, 10 years is a long time, but the positive side is that it worked. Like there, you know, there are people who have been around for years and years, so they're, that's the type of like loyal audience who gets it that you really want.
Yeah,
and that definitely makes everything easier. And then I also try, I genuinely care. Like I know that I don't have a company without people shopping. I feel like a lot of businesses forget that sometimes, where they like don't appreciate their customers and their audience as much as they should. So I think that has helped too, where like I really try to take feedback into consideration, and at conventions I try to like actually talk to people and see what they like and don't like. So I mean, the direction that the company has gone is, you know, basically as much because of feedback from you know, our community as it is from just what I want to do, which is great, because if I just did what I wanted to do and no one else liked it, then it wouldn't make any sense either. So it's a group effort, which is great.
I like that you see it as a group effort, because it is, right?
Yeah, it's like you're really nothing without your community.
Yeah. And same thing with, you know, a podcast. If no one's listening, you can still have it. Like, we don't have a ton of listeners, but if I didn't listen to the things that the people listening liked, then, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, for sure. So what does a normal day look like for you, running two companies and maybe getting back into nannying as well? Like, how do you fit it all into your days?
It's weird. My normal days are weird, and they've gotten a lot weirder. Like, you know, the pandemic was very strange, and then moving at the tail end of when quarantine sort of being lifted is very strange. A normal day, this is very cute and fun. I started doing yoga on Zoom with three of my friends at the beginning of the pandemic. Nice. So we are still doing that. So I wake up and do a little virtual yoga with Adrian, is the person who
she's the absolute best person
so we just
ever
like go back through her years of like 30-day challenges and just them back to back. It's great. So start there. I've gotten actually like really into cooking again, so I usually, you know, make myself coffee and breakfast. The thing that needs to happen is like that I actually answer my emails. I read them all. I am not as great at answering them, which is, like, not acceptable at the age that I am, but I just need to, you know, so going through emails. And then the rest of my day is kind of different depending on what needs to happen. Like, some days I need to ship orders, so that's what I spend my day doing. Some days it's, like, planning future projects or actually designing things or getting new photos up on the website or like placing orders for conventions when they used to happen. So it's different projects every day, basically. You know, sometimes the magazine is due, so we have to edit the articles. Sometimes I have a ton of podcast interviews. So there isn't, I don't have a very set schedule at all, which is probably not great, but it's just kind of the way it had to work. I've also, one of the things that I started doing this literally a month before the pandemic hit, so it's been not as great of a like launch as I wanted it to be, but I like social media the most, and so I started freelancing that out for other nerdy companies. Again, I tried to start last February and then the pandemic hit in March, so like that was not really a great time for many people to be hiring out marketing. But I'm lucky to be working with a couple people doing that now. So sometimes it's either helping them with their strategies or, you know, researching what's new with Instagram and how we can all use it. So, yes, very different every day, but I like that.
Yeah, that's the kind of days I like as well, where it just, it's always interesting and keeps going and it's a challenge and fun and all the things.
Mm-hmm. Just whatever needs to happen is what gets done that day.
Self-employed life is interesting and a challenge at the same time. Like, there are some things that are just, like, amazing that you can do, and some things are just really shit.
Yeah, like, figuring out sales tax and, like, all of that stuff and sales reporting is my nightmare.
Isn't that really complicated also for the US, because it's based on whatever country this is going to and whatever? Terrible. And then it's different. That sounds like and accounting is like legit the absolute fucking worst thing on the planet. So I would just like to praise everyone who is an accountant out of their own free will, just because, like, yes, fucking hell,
it's so hard.
It's the worst. It's so hard.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to hire someone for help with that this year. Because I, when you're small enough, you can sort of guess and hope you're right. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm definitely going to get in trouble. I don't know what I'm doing. So
that's the one thing that Tom and I have outsourced with our business from day one. You're just like,
yeah,
this is it. This is the only thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so complicated.
Yeah.
I still need to hand in my papers now that we're talking about it. Fucking hell.
Money, we talked about this like a month ago.
I know. I forgot. I sent the thing in and then she said she needed the folder. And I'm like, well, fuck this. I need to print all that shit out, put it in a fucking folder and deliver it. And that never happened. So yeah, that's a bit annoying. I should be doing that, I suppose. Anyway.
Oh, gosh. So... correct me if I'm wrong, Jordan. You used to do the screen printing yourself, and then you've recently, like within the last few years, you've outsourced that.
Mm-hmm.
How has that like decision changed your process, freed up your time, benefited? I don't know. Talk about it.
Yeah. That's a big one. So I don't know if you knew the company Bombsheller. They did nerdy leggings. They were based out of Seattle. And my friend Jaslyn was the COO of that company. And something that was very cool about it, like, we interviewed her from the magazine and just from talking to her in general as, like, a fellow nerdy clothing company. Something that was really appealing to me, like, they being sustainable was really important to that company, and they did all of their leggings on demand. So, like, someone would order something, and they would print them and cut them out and sew them, so they had no waste, which was great. And that was sort of like in the back of my head because, you know, most clothing companies, like, you have a lot of extra stuff. I mean, sometimes you magically make exactly what you need, but that, like, never happens. And so then it's the constant, like, especially with clothing, when you have things in sizes, it's hard because they just have to match up perfectly. So, like, if customers want a design and a color that isn't available, so... as I started having more designs, basically I had two options. One was to do like a warehouse kind of route where either I would have to rent like a huge space to keep every design in every size in every color. And then also probably limit the number of designs that could stay available because like it's just kind of crazy to keep, you know, 500 designs in stock. Like, that's wild, which is possible, but then that also made me kind of sad because I would have people, you know, messaging me. They're like, I just found your company and you have this design from 3 years ago. Like, can I get it? I love this character or whatever. And it always made me really sad to not be able to do that. So then the other option is to do something on demand. So it was a hard decision and not everyone liked it, which is fair. But definitely it was the thing that made, like, the version of my company that I have now possible. Like, I think we have, you know, 600 or 700 different products, which, like, I could never keep all that in stock. And then because fandom is so specific and I really like kind of being in this niche where, like, I can make a design that maybe only 10 people will want and that's totally fine. And 10 people can buy it and then, like, I didn't make 300 of those shirts and it's totally fine. So that's something that I thought was cool, that it lets me be more specific. And like if someone with a very niche fandom like wants to see a design, I don't have to say no because enough, I don't think it'll like sell well enough because I can sell one of something and it's fine because it's just made on demand. So that part has been really great. It is more expensive per product, but then you don't have any waste. So it's like it all kind of balances out. But especially with moving, it was very nice to not be moving like 9,000 t-shirts.
My goodness, that I was just great. Imagine.
Yeah. And I didn't really – the thing that I like about this company wasn't the actual like making and shipping. Like I didn't want to run a warehouse. That's not what's fun for me. So,
and it doesn't make sense to be doing this when something else can do it for you in the same quality.
Yeah.
And you can have just such a better and freed up life because of it. Because like who likes to stand at home with a printing with a machine and doing this in the amount that you're doing this, and then as you say, all the other things and the stock and all of it is just and you're only one person, like, and then everything just gets even bigger when you need like employees or whatever and people that help you and warehouses and where do you store all of this, and it just gets so expensive so fast. And when there are options out there that can do it for you, then why the fuck not?
Yeah, and it makes pivoting easier too, like, which is something especially over the past year I think is really valuable, because a lot of companies need like months ahead of time to plan things, and I don't really like, you know, if something happens, or even this doesn't happen that often, but like, even if we have a design that for some reason doesn't feel like a good thing to sell anymore, we can just like take it down, and I don't have, you know, hundreds or thousands of things left to sell off, so that's really nice too. So there's a lot of pros and cons. For me, this works, and then there are a lot of companies doing the other version, which is great too. So like, if someone really, you know, wants, like, Super Yaki Club is one of my favorite nerdy companies, and they do that where it's more like short releases, everything's screen printed, it's all pre-ordered, so like, if someone really likes to shop that way, they can, which is great.
Why did people not like the way you went with when you changed your business model, basically?
So one of the things, the print style is different. This print on demand is called, it's called like direct to garment printing, and it's slightly different than screen printing, and some people are just very particular about what they like, which is fine and fair. Other than that, that was the main thing. And also, just people don't like change. So, like, anytime anything changes, it's just like, oh no, what's happening? And then everyone forgets in 4 months and it's fine. So, basically, that's what it was.
Fair. That's a real mood.
And I get it. I totally get it.
That's, thanks for explaining that.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that I think, when, as your business grows, like, it's a consideration you have to make for, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think I would be able to do the magazine and podcast otherwise. So, like, to me, having those is very important. So, like, I want to make decisions that let me do that, because I think they're great. So,
and I mean, especially as a self-employed person, like, you need to find all the avenues that do bring you joy in a way, and then figure out what works best for you. And as you say, you can pivot and navigate and do that way faster when you like are more flexible like that. So it just makes a lot of sense. And as you said, your essence is not the printing itself. Of course, you want to have great clothing in, but for you, it's the community, and you can nurture your community. For that, you need more time. Like, for that, you do need time. And when you have a company that's taking you away from that, then it's not the company you want to have.
Yeah. There are, like, I'm friends with Allison, who runs Rock Love Jewelry. And it's been very cool because she's, I think her company's been around a few years longer than mine. And, like, she has gone down, like, she's gone the opposite direction in a really incredible way, where her jewelry, where she used to make everything by hand, has grown so much, and now she has licenses with like Marvel and Disney and DC and Pokemon. Oh, nice. So it's very cool. And I had a couple meetings with her where she was like very kind and kind of helping me, like explaining what that looks like and helping me figure out if that's what I wanted. And I think for me, like, she's still designing a lot, which is very cool, and she's able to produce all of these amazing things. And also, she spends way more time like in business meetings with lawyers and like reviewing contracts and, you know, making sure that like she's like outsourcing things, and it's a lot of quality control. And so for me, that just didn't feel like that is the end of that direction. That's like that's the success that you get that way. And I was like, I don't really want to do that. That's what I'm the worst at. Like, I really don't want to, like own a lot of blazers and like sit in a lot of meetings where we're talking about like huge numbers that will just make me terrified. Like, all of that is awesome for the people who can do it. And I don't think that's for me.
Yeah. It's about finding what success means for you and then living that success. Yeah. living, making that reality.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's important to, like, be realistic or honest with yourself about what you want. So, like, if I don't want that to be what the back end looks like, then I can't, my, like you're saying, like, my metrics of success cannot be, like, doing licensed merch with Marvel and DC if I don't want to do all the things that you need to do to get there. So I think that's important for people to remember, too, that, you know, being honest about what you actually want is really helpful to feeling happy with what you have. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Also, I imagine it must be really expensive to get a license there. So, I mean,
super expensive. It's just nerve-wracking. Like, the risk and reward are both a lot higher. But I'm just like, I don't even like that. Like, that stresses me out so much. Yeah. I don't want to do any of that.
Because it's not even that you just give them, pay them a lot of money and then hope you make it back. But it's all probably all also connect with, how much do you need to sell, and how much of that do they even get, and all it's stuff all like that. That. And it's just,
it's a percentage, and it's a minimum amount, and it's wild.
And then you go to bed with the numbers like that in your head, and it's just a lot, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So yes, I did the total opposite, which is like, just if I sell one thing at a time, that's fine. So that's great.
I love that, though. It's all, like, it's the mindset and decisions and supporting yourself. I love it. Okay, so we have a question about, like, gender equality and inequality. And now I think, like, we're all geeks here. We all, like, know that there can be a lot of gatekeeping in the geek community, especially, like, if you're going into certain fandoms. How does that translate into magazines and clothing brands? Because I, aside from, this might come out as just a jumble of words that don't make a lot of sense, so please bear with my thought process here. aside from, like, licensed clothing and, you know, occasionally, like, things in Hot Topic or something, like, there isn't a lot of, okay, everything is for men in geek culture except for the things that are specifically for women. So, does that even make sense? I think it does. It makes sense in my head.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So how is it, like, we don't see small businesses coming out with, like, geek t-shirts for men. Unless it's entirely possible they're there. I just don't see them. It's just, like, everything else is for men. So how does, like, it all relate then? How does it all, what am I even trying to say here? Do you feel, like, as a geeky t-shirt business owner, company, oh, Jesus Christ, man, I get the words out. Do you feel as a geeky business t-shirt company, gee, that didn't make sense either.
It help doesn't me. Matter. We help know what me. You're talking about.
Just answer my question that I did not make the words come out to say. Help me.
So one thing that's very interesting is that I kind of have the opposite of what you would think, which is like, most of my customers are women, and most of my audience is, like, most of our listeners, most of the contributors to our magazine. And that's cool sometimes. Like, that, I mean, that is very, very, very cool. But then, like, it's so strange to think about not gatekeeping the opposite way. Like, we run these quarterly fashion challenges through the Sartorial Geek, and the first, like, year and a half that we did them, only women and non-binary people and, like, mostly women entered. And then, like, in the past few, like, a few more men have entered and we're like, yes, you're, like, so invited here. This is very cool. Like, men in geek fashion, they're definitely out there, but they are harder for me to find, at least. And I don't think there are quite as many, or I just don't know them. And, like, we had someone who is a super, super cool comic writer want to join our Discord and was like, is this just for women? Like, I don't want to overstep. Like, I don't want to, like, invade this space. And we're like, no, you're totally invited. So it's kind of interesting because we definitely want to make sure that it continues to be a safe a place where people feel safe and comfortable, but also, like, nothing... We don't try to make anything we put out like super gendered. Like sometimes it'll be, you know, a story about women in history or like women in a certain fandom or something. But like we want men to read our magazine if they want to. Like we want, you know, I want men to buy my clothing if they want to. And I try to be conscious of not making things like super feminine all the time. So yeah, it's a very, very strange version of, which is like the opposite of what you normally think of in the geek space. It's kind of the opposite where like the default person in our community is female and that is cool. And then just sort of looking at that and figuring out like why, and if we like that, and if we want to do more to be more accessible, or if we just want to keep it that way and let people sort of trickle in as they want.
It's really interesting though, because I don't think your shirts are actually super, they're for me, they're like everybody can wear them. Like they're not specifically something where I would say this is like totally only a female clothing, which I am generally like, what even the fuck is that anyway?
Right.
So other than that, it's just not something where not anybody could go. Even the super mask for mask, I don't know, men, whatever, ho ho ho, could wear them. I mean, yeah, that was totally a shit impression, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm a man's man or whatever. Like, your shirts don't ever say, shout anything that they wouldn't be able to wear that at all. So it's interesting that still like a lot of the people who like navigates towards you, that's not the word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
that they're actually women.
Yeah, and especially, so when I first started making clothing, I only had two things. I had t-shirts and tank tops, just one style of both, mm-hmm. and they're both unisex. So only mm-hmm. recently have we even offered things that, like most things on the website are unisex, and then there are a couple things that are like, you know, more typically feminine that are like fitted. So there are a couple things that, but I mean, they also don't have to be either. Like there's nothing that like only female bodies can wear.
Yeah.
And I like that because and you know, like that's something that is on me to consider when we do photo shoots and stuff too. Like I think showing different bodies in clothing makes people shopping feel like that's fine. Like I have had questions from men being like, is there anything unisex? I'm like, the whole everything,
all
is.
Of it.
But I also understand, like, the first few years that I had a website, I do not think there were any men on it, and it was mostly because it was mostly me. Like I didn't have models or anything. But yeah, that's something that I've tried to pay more attention to, just to not give off like an exclusive vibe.
Thank you for such a fantastic response to my jumble of words that didn't
I don't
make
know
any
if
sense.
That's what you wanted, but that's
it was exactly
I
what
of.
I wanted. I just okay, couldn't great. Get the question out, so thank you. My words were just like, hello, no, we're not working.
No, I get that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we ask you the last question, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I don't really think so. There's something that we can't like officially announce yet, but there's some very exciting news with the magazine coming up. So if anyone wants to follow at Sartorial Geek, I don't know when we can tell people, but it will be cool when we can. So that's the only thing that I can think of. No, we covered everything that I like talking about.
I love it. Thank you. And I'm excited, so I'll be stalking because that's cool.
Yes.
So what advice would you give to young kids or older kids interested in getting involved in everything you're doing?
So I forgot to pull this up. I knew that this was going to be the last question. My friend Amy Ratcliffe just wrote a book that I wish I had written, but she did a better job of it than I would have. And it is called A Kid's Guide to Fandom. It just came out on May the 4th. And Liz and I were actually both interviewed for it, which is very cool. But for kids, this book is like exactly what I would have wanted as a kid. It has a bunch of different sections of different like things in fandom, like cosplay and media and podcasting and art and writing. And it's very cool because there's a little quiz at the beginning that's like, what do you like? And then if you fill it out, it'll like tell you which chapter, like it'll be like, okay, you love Halloween. Do you know about this thing called cosplay? And then there are like real life, real time cosplayers talking in there. So I think that like, it's literally like the kids fandom Bible. I think it's incredible.
Nice.
And it's also, I think, a really good resource for parents of nerdy kids who are like I honestly didn't know about fan fiction really until maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I had been like, I knew what it was, but I had no idea like how valuable it was for people and how many writers get their start there and how huge that community was. So it's cool, especially for parents who maybe don't really know, like it tells you what the options are kind of based on your interests. And then other than that, my favorite advice is like in this space, one of the things that I think I love the most about being a nerd is that there are other people who are fans of the same thing as you. And that's so special and that's so unique. So if there's something that you're really into or like a niche that you're really into, probably there are other people out there. And like the internet has made all of that a lot easier to find. And then what I, you know, like to encourage is find a space that already exists if it's out there. And then if it's not, like make it yourself, or, you know, join forces with someone else doing a similar but not quite exactly what you want thing. Because like I'm so thankful for the people who have made spaces that I like. Geek Girl Brunch is how I met 80% of my nerd friends in New York, which is a crazy thing that just like three people decided to like set up a brunch, and now it's like an international thing. And that's how I met tons of people who I've then collaborated with and really changed my business. So I think if you have an idea of something that doesn't already exist, you should just do it, because chances are other people want it too. And then that's great for all of you.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I think like that's really powerful. Like just, you know, start it with three friends and it could become something huge.
Yeah. And you don't, you know, with the internet and the world we live in right now, you don't necessarily need anything. Like, you know, you could make a website or an Instagram or whatever, and it will be very, very inexpensive, if not free to start. And then you can just do it, which is really cool.
So cool. The book that you've talked about reminded me a bit of the kids' version of The Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy, or Now Universe by Sam Max, which was also something when we talked about it on the podcast a while ago. We were like, I wish I would have had that when I was a little girl, right? Like when I was out there trying to figure shit out and seeing that it's actually okay to, and what I can do if I'm interested in all of that. So that's pretty epic. And that even for younger kids, it's so cool to have like the kid's guide to fandom.
Yeah, I think I would have been super into cosplaying if I knew what it was. Like I love Halloween and I just didn't. And I think I would have loved Dungeons and Dragons as a high schooler too. Like all these things I just didn't know about. So like my late 20s, which was a bummer, but
yeah
for everyone else, you can learn about it sooner and go have a lot of fun.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jordan. This has been a wonderful conversation. Learned a lot from you, and I know that our listeners will as well. So where can we find you online? And don't worry, we will put everything in the show notes. We just like to hear you say it.
all the Jordan Danae social media is at Jordan Danae NYC, which I don't totally know what I'm going to do about that. I don't live in New York anymore.
No, it's true.
But that's what it is. We were there for 10 years, so like maybe we just keep it. I don't know. But that's what it is still. And then at Sartorial Geek is all of the Sartorial Geek stuff. It was really easy to find.
Perfect. Thank you. And yeah, I'll definitely be putting all of that in the show notes, like I say.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here. It was absolutely amazing. And thanks for putting up with us and all.
Oh my God, this is the best.
All the fangirling, all the tripping over our tongues, all the, you know, words being difficult. It's good.
We're just a bit awkward, but that's just how it is.
That's how nerd life is, and it's great.
Exactly.
Love it.
So, thank you. And the listeners, we hear each other on another amazing episode of Geek Herring next week.
Woohoo.
Bye. Did you say woohoo?
Okay. I said woohoo.
Okay. Bye.
If you like this episode of Geek Herring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Herring and over on geekherring.com.